CliffCentral.com.
First day of proper technical glitches. I knew this was going to happen at some point, but I was completely unprepared for it. We got a lot to do this morning, despite the fact that that everybody's thinking, oh, weekend, and of course you want to go out and you want to have parties and you want to fly around the world. All of that is going to happen. But in the meantime, I'm just going to mute you, Mbulelo. These sounds are driving me crazy. In the meantime, we do have people to talk to, and one of those people is the CEO of Tour Radar. Now, this guy, Travis, we haven't spoken to him before, but I thought it would be a good idea to talk to him because he runs a business called Tour Radar, Travis Pittman, and he's going to join us to talk a little bit about what the travel industry is thinking right now. I mean, the travel industry has been hit the hardest. Am I right? I mean, Leanne, you've got some clients as well who are in travel, right?
Yeah, not directly, but I know someone who used to do the PR for SAA.
Oh, that's a tough job.
Wow.
What era do they do it in?
So what?
What era? Like what's 2 years ago? Because that's also shitty time.
They stopped on the account about 6 months ago. So I think they got out of there just in time.
I don't even know. I mean, was 6 months ago? That place has been ailing for the longest time. Anyway, the point is, the travel industry's really been hit very hard by this whole thing. And I think that it's probably interesting to discuss the ups and downs of what's going on. And Travis is a good guy to talk to. Tour Radar, we'll find out about his business, but it's a tough conversation to have. He's going to hopefully shed some light on that with us. And then we'll also talk to Adrian Groenewald a little bit later on. You know, he used to host the Leadership Platform on CliffCentral.com. He still has the Leadership Platform. It's carrying on. He just does it slightly differently. And he also lives near the Kruger National Park, which is an interesting place to be because what's going on there at the moment is that animals are having the best time of their lives. And humans are just not even traveling through the park. So it feels to the animals like, oh, wow, we're back in 1800. And people are not bothering us at all.
Also, sticking with animals, I've loved seeing the different posts on social media of people commenting how their pets are reacting to seeing them so much nowadays. Like some people with cats, not surprising because we know that cats are so evil, are saying that their cats will just like slightly like gnaw at their heels or constantly meow because they're like, what are you doing here? Get out, human. Whereas I even shared it with Leanne a couple of days ago. There was this cute puppy. What breed was it? Was it a sausage dog?
Yeah, it was a Dachshund.
Yeah, that had to be taken to the vet because of it had sprained its tail since it was wagging its tail so much at seeing its owner at home all the time.
I think that's just the cutest thing. So, yeah, he's a very waggy dog.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, his tail just sagged. And he was wagging his bum, but his tail wasn't moving.
Because he's just tired of wagging his tail, right?
No, it was sprained.
Oh.
Actually sprained. So from too much wagging, because he was so happy.
Are vets considered essential services during this time?
Yes. I went on Monday. I took my cat to the vet.
Yeah.
She's ailing, and I'm at the moment considering putting her down. She's kind of in her last phases.
God.
But I drove up to the parking lot and they stopped me in the parking lot and said, just stay in your car. So instead of the waiting room scenario, everyone was waiting in their cars. Then the vet comes out to see you and stands a distance away from you and you describe what the issue is. They take the animal inside, treat it and bring it back out again.
Well, that sounds like a palaver over nothing because, I mean, if they're touching the animal and the animal's been around you, there's a high likelihood that...
Yeah, but they're wearing gloves and they use different gloves for each patient.
All right.
Oh.
And then afterwards you go in and pay, but you have to sanitize first.
Ay, ay, ay. And then...
Yeah, when I...
Yeah, go on.
Uh-huh. When I did go to the grocery store on Saturday now, I walked past a pet shop and it took me aback a bit. I was like, hey, why is it open? But then I thought, oh no, that's where you get food for your pets. Of course, even a pet shop has to open there.
Sure.
A lot of the apps that deliver dog food or cat food to your home are doing really well at the moment. So, yeah, good for them. There are some businesses that are thriving.
Well, I remember Pet Heaven, who sponsored that series with you, Leanne, that we did a while ago. Pet Heaven is still going around.
Heavy petting.
Yeah, Heavy Petting is what it was called, and that was a whole.
Well, it was called Pause for Thought. The one previously was Heavy Petting.
Oh, right.
Oh,
Okay.
yes. Sorry.
That's right.
Good morning, everyone.
All right. Hey, Travis, how you doing, dude?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
Good. Now, Travis, you guys in the tourism industry you're fucked, right? I mean, what's going on?
It's definitely pretty rough times right now for us.
Shame, man. I'm so sorry about that because there's so many people I know who are in the travel and tourism and hospitality business, and they're taking a massive knock from this because nobody obviously is going anywhere. There are no flights all over the world. Hotels, if they're not being used for quarantine, are hardly being booked out at the moment, and this is going to hit the balance sheet really, really hard. But you run a company which is called Tour Radar. Tell me first of all what Tour Radar does.
Yeah, sure. Tourada, we're a online marketplace for multi-day tours. So for safaris or treks or coach trips around Europe, we aggregate some 2,500 different tour operators all over the world, and we market that to consumers all over the world as well. So a lot of our customers come from the US, come from Australia, the UK and Canada. And they travel all over the world, particularly to Europe and also to Asia. So we're obviously being hit pretty hard by what's going on right now.
So what is the status quo at the moment? Clearly, nobody's booking any holidays, and clearly anyone who had holidays has had them cancelled.
Yeah, so it's exactly that. So bookings are very much at an all-time low, and cancellations at an all-time high. So very much trying to manage that volume because clearly people are worried about the future, but a big part of what we're trying to do to also help the industry, a bit what you were saying, is if people cancel and request refunds, that really hurts the tour operators and hurts the hotel owners and hurts everyone because basically the money that's being paid is all going back to the consumer. And so what the big push is and what we're trying to really encourage people to do is to postpone rather than actually cancel. And so we've actually pushed a feature out in record time. So our tech team did an amazing job. And what we've done is actually put what's called a credit for future tours. So whenever someone says, "Hey, look, I want to cancel," we get on and say, "Look, we'd really encourage you to get a credit, like a voucher, that you can use at a later date where you have no cancellation fees, you have 100% of the money that you gave us, and you can use that with the same tour operator for a later date." And it's been taken up really, really well, actually.
I know you qualified as a mechanical engineer. Don't you wish you'd stuck to engineering?
At this stage, yeah, the last few weeks, I definitely thinking about that,
I'm kidding. I mean, you and your brother built up this incredible business. And when you tell people, when you can roll out a feature like you just have, where you can postpone a holiday, for example, do you have any idea of whether or not there is an end to this? And are you telling people like you could postpone for a year? Are you telling them they can postpone for 3 months? Because you can't wait forever either. And I think this is the problem for a lot of people in travel, tourism, and hospitality is when does this thing end? Because if you know it's going to end in 3 months, then we could probably rescue a lot of money that's been spent, and there's probably a lot of ways we could put that to good use now. If you don't, if it's going to be 6 months to a year, it's not the same. You're not going to get the same value for money in that period of time. And you can't promise and you can't necessarily deliver anything. Do you have any idea how long this window is going to be? What are you planning?
So the really interesting thing, so for our type of product, like just to give you an example, the average booking is like $2,500, and it's a trip length of around 12 to 14 days. So it's kind of like an epic trip that people do book and really plan ahead for. So typically people book around 6 months in advance of taking a trip like this. And the interesting thing we're seeing right now is those credits that we're giving people they're already starting to be rebooked, and they're being rebooked for the same month, but next year.
Oh, wow.
So instead of it traveling April in 2020, they're actually traveling in April 2021. Okay. So they're basically just shifting their travel plans back 1 year, which is super interesting because they've really wanted to go to maybe Greece, or they maybe wanted to go to South Africa, and they've really planned for that. So they're like, look, okay, we just put it on pause for a year and we do it next year instead. So that's one difference between our type of product and maybe some of the other sort of short-term, short trips like around Europe and those type of things. Yeah.
Well, that also shows you that people have hope that what's going to happen is that we're eventually just going to go back to normal, right?
So, I mean, if you look at the different, so many different reports, I just listened to one of your podcasts and yeah, like everyone seems to be an expert these days on it all. And the latest stuff coming out from the travel industry, they are looking at China and they are looking at Asia, as kind of the early signs. Mm. And the trip.com CEO, so the C-Trip CEO yesterday sort of talked about that, you know, domestic travel is starting to come back. So I think that's what we'll start to see is people will feel comfortable traveling within their own country first. Right. And then they'll actually start to consider international travel as the, you know, lockdowns go away, the borders start to get opened, and we start to have a bit more confidence and hope. So,
well, I only can wish you luck, and I hope that we are back to normal fairly soon, because I don't know how much more business can take. And I certainly think that people like you are trying their best to manage the situation, and well done to you guys for rolling out a possible solution. And I really think, like, this panic is kind of overboard in some ways, because we may look back on this by April of next year and go, what a stupid test case of humanity's panic mode. And maybe yeah. maybe we're traveling the world again. Maybe everything's back to normal.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, we're forecasting that, and I've actually heard it from quite a few smaller tour operators as well. It's the 2020 is pretty much a write-off, really. So there's a lot of small tour operators can maybe one, two, three, four people in their business, and they're kind of just putting it on ice for the rest of 2020, right. And then walking away and say, look, we'll pick it back up in 2021 when things actually get going again. Obviously, that's for the smaller the providers, but some of the bigger providers out there, they're, you know, planning for, yeah, recovery towards the end of this year, but, you know, coming into Q1 2021, that hopefully we can start to all be traveling and exploring the world again. Yeah.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you so much, Travis. Nice to speak to you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for the
very
call.
Good. There you go. Travis Pittman is the co-founder and CEO of Tour Radar. Wow.
Thank you.
If you know people who are in the tourism and travel business, then you got to just tell them to hold on tight, because it's going to be a hell of a year. And as he said, it's kind of a write-off for a lot of people.
Wow.
Yeah. Scary. Huh?
I think we're going to be seeing so many new companies formed after this, mm-hmm. because what I'm seeing in the hardest hit industries, for instance, restaurants, a lot of them have had to,
reconfigure?
No, not reconfigure, but shut down. But what's it called? To make themselves insolvent? What? I don't know.
Oh, you mean going to business rescue?
No, not even that.
It'll
come to me.
All right. This is a hell of a word. This is the biggest mystery word of the morning.
Yeah. Okay. What? Two syllables? Sounds like, rhymes with.
Oh my gosh, it's horrible. This age thing is really
bad. Is it of Latin origin?
Yeah. Let's play the word game with Leanne Moll this morning. This is a fun way to spend the time.
Charades. Oh, yay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not dissolve. What is it? Anyway.
Insolvent, dissolve, retrench.
Something like that. They've had to shut down their liquidate.
Liquidate is the word you're looking for.
Thank you.
That's unbelievable.
So I think there'll be a lot of new little companies starting again soon. Stop laughing at me.
We waited for that. I mean,
for
really.
Liquidate.
Shut up.
40,000 years for liquid.
Hey, guys, I showered and shaved and cleaned myself up last night. I felt so good after I got out of the shower, because even though I haven't seen people in person for, what is it, 4 or 5 days at the moment, because I think I went to my parents for lunch on Sunday, and just to shit them out for not taking this seriously enough. And then I didn't let myself go, but I realized that if I didn't dress properly, and I had to read this book for these kids yesterday, I had to do the storybook thing. And I suddenly thought last night when I, you know, before I was about to get into bed, I was like, you know, I really should clean myself up. Just do all the maintenance and the grooming and all the rest of it that you need to do.
And I got manscaping.
And I got into the shower and I sorted myself out. And afterwards, I looked in the mirror and I felt a little bit more proud of myself than I did the previous 3 days where I was just kind of slobbing around in tracksuit pants. And
yeah, it makes a huge difference. For instance, I did a similar thing. I had a shower last night. I put on a face mask.
Oh, well done.
I changed my linen. And so I got into bed in fresh PJs and fresh linen.
That's good. That's good. You have to do these things. Otherwise, it's sad how quickly you lose your grip on things. I mean, Mbulelo, how's the drying out of your underpants in Sia's office going? Is that still working for you?
I've got a routine going now, and it's good, man. It's never been better. We've now got a system from chair to table to couch.
Oh, that's great.
And then it rotates.
So revolting.
I'm so proud of you. Well done.
Production line, really. Thank you, Henry Ford.
My mother, sister, and I were having a similar conversation about 2 days ago. Yeah. We on slobs, but we are starting to crack.
Uh-oh.
So ladies will understand what I'm saying here. Leanne, what's the type of manicure, pedicure a woman can have that's almost like hardened gel over their nails?
Is it liquidate?
It's a liquidate. you can have gelish.
But now my sister and mother are at the point where their natural nails are growing underneath. So this gel is now awkwardly over it. So it looks like this gel is now this unkept claw, and you have to use some sort of chemical when you go to, you know, the nail parlor or beautician to get these off.
You've got to have them soaked off.
Yeah, you can't just pull it off. So right now, they're at that awkward claw-like phase.
Yeah.
We look horrible.
Some of my shorter toenails have any gel on them.
Yeah.
But my big toenail still has gel on it. Thank goodness I didn't have any on my hands before, so now I'm just au naturel.
Okay. Well,
we're starting to show the signs of cracking, let me tell you.
Yeah, there's also the shaving issue. Like, I'm certainly not shaving my legs.
Are you not?
No.
What if a gentleman caller comes a knocking during the coronavirus?
No ass play, Gareth.
What if it's the delivery guy? Ooh, this scenario.
Hello, Leanne. I'm here
no
for my
ass play. Go
I'm here
away.
For my monthly sex visit. You're not gonna let them in?
No, definitely not.
Even if he woos you with a box of cigarettes,
that is the corona coitus call.
Yeah.
If it was alcohol or cigarettes, I would seriously consider it. My stocks are running low. Yeah.
You are reinventing what it means for a Mr. D delivery then.
Yeah.
No, but it's so true. I mean, so in my living room, one of my curtain rails fell down, and I haven't been able to repair it. So I've had to leave the curtain open. So any intruder would be able to look in and they would see my TV, for instance.
Oh, right.
So I moved my TV out of the way. And then I realized the biggest prized possession was sitting in full view. And that's my dining room table, filled with bottles of wine and cartons of cigarettes.
That is like a trap, a honey trap. That's what that is.
Exactly. So if ever there was temptation, I'm going to have to put something over it to cover it.
I've been laughing, looking at the trend of people posting just like a bottle of beer from a six pack going, hey guys, okay, I'm selling this 1,000 rands, organize your own.
Well, you know, you people all laughed at me when I used to stock up on things like light bulbs and bottles of booze and all the rest of it. If I did want to drink, if I were going to spend this weekend on a bender, for example, I have the necessary supply.
Gareth, this is not something you should share with people at the moment.
Oh, let them come, because I've also got ammo and a gun.
Oh. Okay.
No, but I'm saying, like me, I'll probably phone you in a few days.
No, I'm not giving to anyone. I don't want physical contact. I'm maintaining social distancing, but if you're going to come and rob me, I'm going to shoot you in the head.
Oh, jeez.
I have supplies of booze that could last me, I mean, seriously, and, you know, I mostly drink tequila. I don't drink anything else, but if anyone... else was here. I've got wine, I've got beer, I've got spirits, I got the whole lot. I'm like a macro liquor.
Well, this is, I think right now is the best time to talk about this. You know, there have been calls to call off the ban for not buying cigarettes and alcohol.
Yeah, you can't go to shops and buy cigarettes. They've got like tape across the cigarette counter, right?
Yeah. And there's actually a serious issue behind this. There's what I like to call the good, the bad, and the deadly. The good is that people are not walking around drunk, hopefully, and doing things that they shouldn't do. The good is also that perhaps it's a time for people to detox and, you know, live their lives a bit differently. The bad is that we are starting to want to look at illegal methods of getting alcohol and cigarettes. Some of these cigarettes are fake and contain bad chemicals. And the deadly is something very real, and that's the main reason why you've got groups and organizations who are calling for the unbanning of selling of alcohol, is because if you are dependent on alcohol, and when I say dependent, I don't necessarily mean mentally dependent, but you develop a physical dependency. For instance, if I have less than a bottle of wine, I can actually feel the physical symptoms.
Really?
I'll start... Oh, absolutely.
Huh.
I'll have hallucinations at night, go through the sweats, just feel generally terrible. And for those who are extremely dependent on a large amount of alcohol, if you stop immediately, there is a huge danger that you can die.
Oh, my God.
If you go into delirium tremens, you've got your heart can stop, you can have seizures.
Oh, my God.
And it has to be tapered off gently, or you need to have medication to help you through the coming off of alcohol process.
Wow,
so
Leanne,
they are cool.
You know what? You've actually brought something up that I didn't even think about, because as someone who isn't dependent, like if I don't have a drink for the next 3 years, I think I'll be okay. And usually for me, drinking is a social thing. But you've just made me think about all those people who are actually addicted and don't have an option. Like for them, it's not just an entertainment thing. It's not a release. It's part of their daily routine. And I'm not going to criticize that, because there's no point at this stage of our lives. And when we're in lockdown and in crisis, there's no point in telling people how to behave and, you know, trying to correct them and being one of those prefects, as Gord called them the other day. Those people are going to suffer right now, and they're going to take it out on the people around them.
Yeah.
Which is really scary.
There's that as well. This time, this era that we're living in, makes me realize how much it's highlighting our personal battles and difficulties, and opening them up for everyone to see. You know, so I have anxiety and depression, and I live through it. But the panic and the panic attacks that I told you about that I was having, which have now subsided.
Yeah.
But that made me completely vulnerable. And I had to say to people, I haven't been able to meet this work deadline because I'm having a panic attack. Before, you could hide that shit and use some other excuse. The day before lockdown, I had to buy quite a bit of alcohol. And it was extremely embarrassing. And I felt... Everyone was watching what I was doing. There were about 4 or 5 of us out of 50 who were doing it. And I actually had to.
Did
just
you
get
have a whole?
That.
How much did you buy? I mean, come on, let's level with me here. What did you buy? Cases and cases of wine?
No, I bought about 20 bottles.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ, Leanne.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
so, yeah.
Like I said, I'm not going to judge, but how much do you go through in a day?
I'll easily have a bottle.
Oy, oy, oy.
Easily. I mean, if you, especially if I'm cooking.
All right. Okay.
So, yeah, and that, and then there was also having to buy cartons of cigarettes before lockdown. Yep. So all of these vulnerabilities that we were able to hide before are now wide out and open.
There's some honesty right there. Okay. We've got Adrian Groenewald on the line. I haven't seen Adrian in ages. Adrian, you're sporting a bit of a beard there in the Kruger National Park. How are you, my friend?
I'm really good, thank you, Gareth. Yeah, I could put the video off if it...
No, please don't. It's, in fact, I remember you and your dad, when you did the leadership platform together, you used to often video conference people in. You've been preparing for lockdown all your life. You live in a place where there are only a few people. You're mostly surrounded by animals. For you, this isn't much of a change from the normal, right?
Yeah, my wife the other day for a while now, she's been looking for the right word to describe our lifestyle.
Yeah.
She says society has given it to her. It's called lockdown.
Yeah, and you and your family have been in lockdown for a couple of years now. So you've been in training.
Yeah, it's over 3 years. Kids are on homeschooling. I've been working hard to build a digital business, you know, like yourself. And some things have come off, some haven't, but yeah, I mean, I'm used to Zoom like other people are used to normal meetings. I have several Zooms a day, been on Zoom all over the world for the last year or two. It used to be the exception, now it's the norm. So yeah, definitely been prepared for it. It's not big, such a big difference, except Crocodile River. Can't go into Kruger as often as we used to, but still we have animals around, we have bush around, it's beautiful.
What kind of animals come into your property, just out of interest?
Yeah, I mean, giraffe, wildebeest, zebra, kudu, bushbuck, duiker, you know, almost everything. We have cats. Cats come through the park because we border the park, so there's often holes underneath a fence and leopard come over and that sort of thing.
Wow.
And then we're warned that they are in the park, but, you know, we don't see them from here necessarily.
That's incredible. Okay, so Adrian, the reason I wanted to get you on today, because we could probably talk to you anytime, but it's been a while, and you wrote this beautiful piece about leadership, and leadership is really your thing. This is why you started the Leadership Platform. You started writing about this long before you and I met, and you wrote this interesting article, which I think people need to hear about. It's a story, really, and by the end of the story, the villain becomes the hero in some ways. Do you want to just explain what the article was about? And I mean, I'm going to refer people to go and read it anyway, but give us the gist of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to touch on the spirit and the letter of the law. And as leaders, we've got to start living that. We need to mature to a point where we can, as a society, I mean, the little story, I don't know if that's what you're referring to, but,
yes,
you know, here in the park, we've got older people, yeah. A lot of them retired, and they love sitting around and reporting anyone who maybe is driving down to the river or anything like that. And you know, we specifically have someone here who took a little toddler for a walk in the pram around the block. And she was also reported. And that just had me thinking deeply about our society, about the inequalities, about the fact that I felt empathy towards the mother eventually. First, I thought, how can she be so responsible? And then I thought, no, the spirit and the letter of the law says she's not affecting anyone. She won't come into contact with any human being. But I also realized that right now the spirit of the law cannot weigh as heavy as the letter of the law, because how does the spirit of the law impact seven people in a shack who cannot even put their foot outside and they hear whoop, 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 you know, the police is right outside their door. So, Gareth, I think I'm going through my own journey of trying to understand what this virus is trying to teach us as a society, what it's trying to teach leaders, how we need to prioritize You know, the smallest of things is bringing the biggest of things to its knees, from me as a human, a virus, to a large organizations, to countries. Mm-hmm. So are we being taught to reprioritize, to say, hold on, maybe small things are as important as big things, small businesses versus big businesses, small human beings versus big profits and shareholders. Maybe the guy in the shack, we've got to focus on him more and her more than we should on me, who's got nice space here during lockdown. And you've got this beautiful study, you know?
Adrian, so a lot of things, do you think there's anyone who is showing leadership at the moment? Are there people who for you are exemplary in what the particular point you're trying to hit at in doing that, in acting as a leader in a time of crisis?
Gareth, all the leaders are under huge pressure to somehow be authentic and be their real selves. I mean, we had this example the other day of Grant Patterson, who gathered all the suppliers.
Edcon
suppliers, and he tried to explain to them that his priority has to be his people. Again, what's the message there? The message is my priority shareholders, and once lockdown is gone, will we go back and just be subservient to shareholders and cut jobs, or are we going to be more focused on human beings? There was an example, but that was just one isolated example. I think Cyril Ramaphosa is showing, and this is also the hero and the villain thing, he's certainly showing, we think, heroic leadership by tackling this thing aggressively and early on. But in a few weeks, we may discover that he's the villain because he did not switch things back on in time, and therefore the economy is damaged irreparably. Maybe he does not listen enough to advice when it comes to our own unique model, as opposed to a Western model. Trump, I've seen Trump shift from arrogance to he proposes it differently. Arrogance to some humility and acceptance of this thing, and now he's trying to be the hero, but yet he's also battling within himself in that he wanted to switch it back on the economy, but now he's back to saving lives again. So he's ambivalent and switching back and forth as a leader, because I think inside himself he's going through this journey of discovering what are my priorities. So you're going through it, I'm going through it, companies are going through it, countries are going through this incredible journey of what's most important, what do we need to look at, and how am I going to lead from here on forward?
Now, you refer in your article that I mentioned to the softer values that leaders need to embody at this time. In other words, that they almost need to go back to first principles in some ways. The old ways are over, and there's a new way of doing things, and nobody knows what the new normal is yet. But those softer values, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. So right now we're on the letter of the law lockdown. The spirit of the law is if I go for a jog and I come into contact with no one, then I should be able to do that.
Right.
It's compassion. We're being forced as a country. We're sitting back and we're saying, well, it's nice for me to be on the lockdown. I was with an executive on Zoom the other day. He was able to go on a 5-kilometer cycle on his own property.
Wow.
Yeah, in the meantime, we've got people literally in shacks who, in my view, it's impossible to put them on lockdown. It's unfair to put them on lockdown. So compassion, absolute compassion, focus on people first and then other things, money second and shareholder value second.
Yeah, those things seem to me to be quite obvious, but for a lot of people, they're not. Like I hear people saying, it's the law, without questioning whether or not that law is A, enforceable, or B, moral. And a lot of these things are not moral. You talk about people in shacks. If you make a law like that, what you're really doing is you're condemning those people to a life in prison. It's not just lockdown for them. It's prison. They are trapped in a room. They cannot go anywhere. They cannot supply their family with the necessary food and sanitation and basic humanity. To me, that strikes me as some kind of immorality. It's a law that is unenforceable. Not all laws are good, right?
Correct. I mean, absolutely. Again, there's a spirit of the law and a letter of the law. And right now, the spirit and the letter of the law is against many people out there. So for you and I, we can have these philosophical discussions about using lockdown as a time to think and discover who I am and what's my future and how will I tackle the new world.
Yeah.
But if you're that individual, then it is prison for you. In fact, going to work is like lockdown for you. You've got more space. You've got more interaction with maybe less interaction with people. But back home, you're literally stuck without a garden. You cannot use this time as this reflective period.
It seems so insensitive for the rest of us to be talking about how we're doing exercising at home and we've got plans to fill our day with all kinds of bullshit. It seems to me that for the average person in this country is just outrageously insensitive.
Yeah, so that's what I think the virus directly, indirectly is teaching us, Gareth, is this whole reprioritization of what's most important in life. And the sad thing is, if it's just 3 week lockdown, we will not learn that. We will not learn these things. It will not stick. And what will happen is we'll literally just be sucked back to the way things used to be. Now, I'm not saying economy is bad or making money is bad. We need money to do good things. Of course we do. But you know, am I caring for my people? Am I making money to do good? Or am I actually making money or using people to make the few insanely rich? You know, what are our priorities? We'll probably focus on the same things in some way, but the motives behind it. And of course, then there's the hard things. We have literally moved into the digital age. Why would you? I mean, a simple thing, Gareth. We want nice studios, don't we? We want nice buildings next to highways.
Sure.
We want all these things. But why would you go back to a nice studio when you're sitting in your beautiful study? You don't have to travel through traffic. Why would you go back to normal, the so-called normal?
I won't. I can tell you now I won't. I'm going to do the show from here from now on. There's no way I'm going to go back.
Yeah. And that's what's happened. You know, we're all forced to rethink everything. My family. Do I love my wife if I have to live with her and in a house for weeks on end, and my kids, you know? Do I really love them? And have I prioritized? I know we say it is a good thing, but we mustn't just westernize our strategy and say lockdown, yes, A, lockdown, but B, our country in Africa to actually sort out this thing. And that leadership I'm not necessarily seeing.
What happened to that woman in the place you live, the estate that you live in? What happened to her after she was reported by these old busybodies?
I just know that someone, a security guy who feels very important, jumped in his car and raced over there and had a chat with her. So what exactly happened, whether she was just asked kindly to go to her home. You see, it hit home more because my wife goes on regular walks with a friend down the road who's a game ranger who's got a little toddler in a pram.
Yeah.
But what I haven't done is to check whether that was her.
Oh, so you don't actually know who the person was.
If the mere fact that it could have been someone that I know hit home.
But do you feel a compulsion to correct those people who decided to report her, or do you feel that you should be compassionate and go over to her and say, hey, I mean, with appropriate social distancing, hey, I feel for you? Or do you think that it's time for people to stand up to this kind of authoritarian nonsense and say, I actually don't believe that this is putting anyone at risk. And let's have a meeting, even if it's on Zoom, and everyone in the estate, stop your shit because this is not harming anybody. And you may be following the law and it may make you or some security guard feel really important, but you're actually hurting people because she can't get out there and walk her kid. And for her, that's her one moment of you know, peace and perhaps her moment where she can exercise or she could do something that doesn't involve being in the bloody house. Is there something you can do about this, or is your article as far as it goes?
Gareth, I think right now, as I weighed it up, I'm a doer. Maybe like you, I'm an activist in some ways. You know, so my instinct was to jump on all kinds of WhatsApp groups and tell people what my feelings are. But as I processed it by writing an article, I realized that for me, the balance came in. It's the duality of leadership. You know, it's so dual and it's so dichotomous and it's so difficult. But I just realized that right now, I think the letter of the law must weigh heavier than the spirit of the law. We can't apply the spirit of the law for her, but what about other people like the Shacks? So my view is after 3 weeks of absolute literal literally living the law, I think the spirit can kick in. If it doesn't, then someone like me would certainly, and may even happen the next 2 weeks. I mean, we're just over a week now, yeah. So I might change in my view. But I think then it's time to start picking up and saying, let's apply the spirit of the law. Now, I've sowed the seed, but I would certainly speak up at the right time. But right now, I think it's almost that mother needs to sit back and say, well, let me compare my life to the Shaq's.
Yeah.
And then in time, we can bring the spirit in.
Well, it's always good to talk to you. And thank you for keeping us updated on your own thoughts on leadership during this time. I think there's going to be a sore need for the kinds of discussions that you've had for 6-7 years already, as long as I've known you, and before that, still more, around leadership. There's clearly nobody who's entirely sure that they're getting it right at the moment. And yeah. we could well, you know, we could benefit from hearing from people like you. So thank you for the work you're doing, Adrian. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, really nice to talk to you, Gareth. Thanks
so much.
Thanks a lot.
Adrian Groenewald, who was the host of the leadership platform here on cliffcentral.com for the longest time and someone who we check in with fairly regularly. Haven't spoken to him in a while, but it's good to hear from him. And Leanne Moll, I just want to pick up on something because someone messaged me and said, wow, that was really brave of Leanne to admit that whole shopping for alcohol thing, because a lot of people are going through it, so it's not just you.
Yeah.
And I want to know something. Do you think, I mean, you're living on your own, so you're okay, but I mean, when I say you're okay, there are benefits and there are obviously detrimental effects to being on your own, but do you think if you had a partner who was an alcoholic, because this is a philosophical question, but it's something which I'm sure the Department of Health have thought about, do you think it's better to live with a drunk partner, or do you think it's better to live with a partner going through withdrawal? Which is going to be harder?
Oh.
Well, this is quite easy for me because I have had a relationship with an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And I would prefer him to be going through withdrawal because that would change his behaviors.
Right.
So I think a big thing that we're looking at now is abuse within the home, domestic abuse.
Yeah.
And that is always highlighted and worse with alcohol. So when I say there's the good, the bad, and the ugly, the good is that hopefully this person gets through detox and mm-hmm. and becomes safer to be around at home.
Wow. Good heavens. Stuff we have to talk about in this situation that we might never have spoken about until now. So maybe there's some healing going on. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm thrilled to see George Meany is in his studio. He's looking as polished as ever. George, you have not let yourself go. You're shaved. Have you had a haircut, or did you go for one just before lockdown?
No. I fortunately I have a wife that is a hairstylist.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm fortunate, and I bought enough razor blades before lockdown, so that was one of the things on the list. And my wife has a hair salon, which is right next to the studio in the house. So.
Oh, wow, that's brilliant. Okay, good for you.
A hair salon.
You really don't have to leave the house.
George, you have planned your whole life so well. If I come back as a human being, it's going to be as George Meany.
No, Gareth, trust me, you don't.
All right, so tell us what's going on.
Well, because
the next thing,
if things really go pear-shaped, you can even fly out of here yourself. Yeah, you see, right. You have planned things right.
I'm telling you, George has got the whole thing organized. Okay, so George, what's going on in the world of motoring?
Well, Gareth, the benefit to motorists of the decrease in the fuel price.
Thanks for that. That's going to be great because we're not driving anywhere.
Well, exactly. So the 95 unleaded price of fuel is going to drop by R2.18 per litre. So, you know, I don't know how much benefit there will be if this lockdown continues, but hopefully the R2.18 per litre extends. It the be softened a little bit, or made worse, I suppose, by a 16 cents increase in the fuel levy and a 9 cents increase in the road accident fund levy, which, you know, isn't great, that the taxes on the fuel are going to go up. But we haven't seen fuel prices like this since early 2018. So hopefully it continues into the rest of the year, even after lockdown, because as you say, it's not going to be great if lockdown extends, because my car's standing in the garage, it's not going anywhere.
Wow. Mm. It's always nice to get a great bit of news like the petrol price is coming down by almost 2 rand and then you can't use it. That's terrific.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah. And then there's a battle brewing in America between Trump as he rolls back the Obama era fuel economy rules. So what he's done is he's deregulated the carbon emission standards that the country has to get to. So he rolled back efficiencies from 5% to 1.5% annual increases of efficiency through to 2026. Obama wanted it to be only a 5% increase, and Trump is rolling back this efficiency, which means that the carbon emissions of cars are going to continue to increase, and the car manufacturers don't have to put up with the regulations that Obama put in place.
Okay, well, obviously environmentalists are going to lose their minds over this. But
I think so, and that's where the battle's coming from.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, to my mind, America is not the greatest carbon emission country in the world. Everybody always has a go at a country like America because they've got rules and laws and they care about the environment, but nobody seems to be making those same rules for Malaysia or for China or for India, and China is the biggest carbon emission country in the world at the moment. So it's all good and well for people to be self-righteous about America and criticize America for being such an evil place, but countries like China are doing absolutely zero to curb carbon emissions, zero. And that Paris Accord that everyone is supposed to have signed, which is supposed to have made all the difference in the world, was just an agreement to agree. Nothing was actually implemented by any of these countries. They've all put deadlines in 2030 and 2040 that many of them are not going to live up to. So what's the point of people getting all uptight around carbon emissions when actually the country that's most at fault is not being brought to book?
Well, I mean, you spoke about it earlier just before I came on, and that is the ability to putting in rules and policies and the ability to actually police them comes into question.
And a whole lot of leaders promising stuff that's going to happen before, long after they're out of office and long before they're probably their children will be in charge of things. It just seems to me like you're making people feel good, but you're not really doing anything.
Well, the achievability of an objective. I mean, we see it in business. You set an objective, which is sometimes pie in the sky. If it's not achievable, what does the objective mean anyway?
That's exactly right. So Trump overturning this Obama thing is going to get people very fired up, and they're going to say, oh, you see, he doesn't care about the environment, and this guy's irresponsible and all that stuff. But actually, what was that regulation achieving in the first place? And if you can bring me data on what's been achieved by that regulation, and you can show me that it made a difference, then I'll take you seriously. Otherwise, shut up.
So on to lighter news. A Lamborghini driver in Australia was driving 160 kilometers an hour and got caught by the police under lockdown. And his excuse?
What?
I was rushed to the hospital to be tested for the coronavirus.
Does he realize that he's going to have to wait 7 days before he smells a result?
So he got a fine and was strongly warned not to speed under any circumstances, even if you're going for a test.
For lying brownie points, though, I'll give him some. Yeah,
George, are there any real excuses you could use for driving around at this time? I mean, if you were on the highway, because I haven't been out of my house further than the shops, which are like less than 2 kilometers away. If you did get on the highway and you were stopped, what are the reasonable excuses? You could say you're an essential service. You could say you are taking supplies to your old mother. What else could you do? Conceivably, if it was a real excuse, what are the actual excuses you could use?
Well, I mean, I think the essential keeping yourself alive, which is going to buy food, if there's a medical emergency. So, if one of your family members, I suppose, are in dire need of medical attention, like your grandmother, and they can't get to the hospital, I suppose, I think it's an unknown part of what we're going through at the moment. And, you know, if it's an emergency, I would imagine you can drive, because if you have to take your grandmother to the hospital, and she can't get there, what do? Leave her to die in her home?
Mm. Well,
I think the same goes for what I said earlier, and that's that we're being exposed. We can't make excuses anymore. Even as far as I'm sorry I'm late for work because I had a flat tire or my gate wouldn't open or my car wouldn't start, all those things. We can't use those excuses anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's stripping you completely bare.
Well, I suppose you could just tell anyone who stops you, you just say, I'm going to the shops, and they can't really argue with you, right? I mean, that's why it's a stupid rule in the first place.
I mean, before the lockdown, I heard that the police and the army were going to scan your driver's license and have a central database that was able to tell how many times you had been scanned. And I don't think that's in place.
I mean, they can't even get e-natus online properly, and they can't make us pay our e-tolls. So good luck to them. I mean, we're talking about a bunch of people who really couldn't organize a piss up in a brewery. And now they're suddenly going to be like the all-knowing police. Oh, please.
But I think they can sniff some things out, because what are the chances that you have to travel on a highway
to get to
your local shop, you know?
Yeah.
No, I mean, for me, it's more about just keeping myself safe, keeping away from other people, because we just don't know what this virus is capable of yet.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going out of the house, and neither is my family.
Hey, listen, let's congratulate everyone on getting through the first week of lockdown, because it was exactly a week ago.
Yeah.
We started lockdown, right? Yeah. So congratulations, South Africa. Mm.
And then what will the roads look like in 2050? And has this experience around the world accelerated the following events? And the first is that there will be electrically powered micro vehicles in the future. Has this accelerated the advent of that? Delivery drones, Amazon, UPS, delivery drones.
I was just about to ask you, what is a micro vehicle? But then you answered the question. So you mean that a lot of trucks and things will be replaced by a lot more drones delivering the same stuff to kind of individuals rather than central locations?
Exactly. So will this have accelerated all of this stuff? Autonomous vehicle parking lots, because if you think about ride sharing, I don't know about ride sharing right now, but autonomous vehicles would reduce parking demands by up to 50%, researchers say. So we can build parking lots for autonomous vehicles. There will be sensors everywhere. Has this accelerated that advent, embedded in vehicles, buildings, traffic lights, and even roads, to provide real-time traffic flow? Has this accelerated that? On-demand public transport, because at the moment you have fixed routes. So all transport systems over the last couple of decades have had to have fixed routes, fixed times, because we don't know the fluctuation in demand and supply, and it's a retrospective calculation. So you look back on all of the demand and supply, and then you fix the routes and the public transport around that. Whereas with big data, you've got on-demand, you can do on-demand public transport, which means that things will work depending on immediate demand. And then a big one with solar panel. A few companies have researched turning roads into roads that are solar panels, which could power cities if a big enough area is covered.
Oh, okay. Well, you listen, and this parking lot thing is fascinating to me, because you think of how much money is spent and how much land is used for parking lots. I don't know if people are going to use that much parking space in the future. We could probably turn that into something, park, maybe something nice.
Yeah, and space is saved, and maybe we could have like central parks like there is in New York, all over the place. Right. And then very finally, what do you do with your car during lockdown? So cars inevitably left unused will deteriorate if you don't look after them in minor or even major ways. So one of the things you could do is disconnect the battery terminal. Now, don't go and disconnect the positive terminal, because you may just fry something. You can disconnect the negative.
Wow, this is good advice. Okay, so only disconnect the negative if you're going to do this.
Yes, or if you're going to disconnect both, then the preference is to remove the battery entirely, because batteries can leak, they can cause problems. So removing the battery entirely is advisable. But if you can't remove the battery entirely, just disconnect the negative terminal. If you're going to remove the battery, disconnect the negative and then disconnect the positive. And if you do it the other way around, you could cause an electrical short in your car and fry something.
That's really useful, because obviously one of the things we talked about earlier this week, we spoke to Ernest North from Naked Insurance, and he was telling us that he's got this cool feature where you can pause your insurance on your car.
Ah.
In other words, while you are not driving your car, and I'm going on the app right now to check, because I made sure that mine was off, and you can have your car, you know, kind of taken off the insurance, which is obviously a useful thing to do when you're not driving it. Makes a lot of sense, right?
It does, but just be careful, because other things can go wrong with your car, like an electrical short if you fiddle with it.
Right.
So I think that's good advice. Pause your insurance, disconnect take it out entirely. And then what people don't probably haven't done before lockdown is wash the car. If your car is dirty, permanently leaving that dirt on the paintwork can cause the paint to get damaged.
Well, a bird, it seems like a pterodactyl, took an enormous shit right on my windscreen just before lockdown, and it's still there, so I must get rid of that today.
Yeah, if you can, put your car in the driveway, wash it, and then put it back undercover. And then talking about undercover, if it's possible, park your car indoors under a roof or use a car cover. Because the sun damage and the deterioration from the environment will cause your plastics to fade, will cause your car to fade, your paint to fade. So try and park it inside if you can, or at least undercover. And then here's another one. Cover the intake and outlets of your car. So take a cloth and stuff it in the exhaust. Take a cloth and cover the inlet air intake. And the reason is
George, rodents. Now you're talking shit. What's this all about?
Rodents and bugs could crawl up.
Oh no.
Where are I don't even know where the inlets are in my car. I mean, which holes do I close? I don't know what you're talking about. Give me specifics.
No ass play.
Exactly. So cover the exhaust. Stuff a rag into the exhaust. You know where the exhaust is, Gareth.
I know where the exhaust is, yes. Okay, so I'm going to stuff a rag in there because of rats. Okay.
Stuff a rag in there. And then open up your bonnet and find the air intake. There will be a duct that you will see for the air intake. It will be pretty visible. And that as well. So that bugs and rodents can't creep into those areas of your car. Because you can imagine if a rodent gets stuck in your silencer and you end up starting the car, you won't understand why there's this dead smell for weeks.
Oh my jumping Jesus.
Or your car will have the biggest fart of its life.
Boy, exactly. Don't forget
your car has a dead rat in its ass. This is insane. All right.
And then your windscreen wipers. If you leave your windscreen wipers for a very long period of time, you know, when you drive your car, the air flow over your windscreen moves your windscreen wipers, so they don't get stuck to your windscreen. But when it stands, your windscreen wipers end up almost adhering to your windscreen. And
especially if it's in the sun, right?
Exactly. So take a piece of plastic or a cloth and stick it between your windscreen wipers and your windscreen and prevent that from happening.
This is like you have to put your car into ICU during lockdown. I mean, you close up its asshole, you put its wipers, you pull its wipers off the windscreen, you've got to make sure that your air intake is clear, you pause the insurance. You make sure it's washed. I mean, it's just
unplug the battery.
Good heavens. I'm going to have the busiest day ever today just sorting out all this stuff.
keep yourself busy. Very, very lastly, the tires of your car, if stood in one spot for a very long time, creates what's called a flat spot. And the next time you drive your car, you'll get a vibration because of that flat spot, because the weight of the car is only on one part of a round tire. So the best way to solve this is to actually jack all four wheels up and leave your car suspended. But not everybody's going to have the ability to do that.
I ain't doing that part.
No. Okay.
So another trick is every 2 or 3 days, just roll your car 30 centimeters forward or backward and just have the weight of the car on a different part of the tire. So that
now we're exercising our car as well. I mean, really, George, you're expecting a lot of us.
You're all sitting doing nothing. Come on.
But this is good advice, George. Thank you.
You know, George, a lot of people say that you guys just know about buying and selling cars at Auto Trader, but my God, show them this podcast and they will never, ever doubt your veracity as the authority on anything to do with motoring. This is incredible. What an incredible podcast.
Great stuff. And that's it for motoring for this Friday.
All right. I'm going to come around to your wife, have my hair cut, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Caught while you're on your way, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll try not to. You're in the East Rand. I'm going to be driving for a long time. I'll just tell the police I'm going shopping.
Bring your passport.
Yeah. Thanks, George. Nice to talk to you, as always. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day and have a good weekend. It's Friday, the 3rd of April already. I can't believe this. And we've done a week under lockdown, so congratulations to everybody. You've done very well. As the president might say, congratulations. You have done well. It's you are making all the necessary changes to your life. I know he doesn't sound like that, but I try.
Yeah, I was about to say, now you sound like the former president.
Now, don't we miss him at a time like this? Those good old days of Jacob Zuma when things worked and we didn't have a virus. All right, everybody, have a good weekend.
Cheers.
Yay. Cecilia. CliffCentral.com.